from the nation's capital. If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here, right here, now. Your anchors, Chris Salcedo and Lori London.
America's Radio News Network.
Recovering after a fantastic Super Bowl weekend. It's 6 minutes past the top of the hour. You're tuned into America's Radio News. Glad to have you on board. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. It's Monday, February 7th. Here's what's happening.
Businesses should make their mark here in America. They should set up shop here and hire our workers and pay decent wages and invest in the future of this nation.
The president calls out big business.
It seems that that call went right to the answering machine.
Palin pounces on the White House response to the chaos in Egypt.
Well, certainly we take an interest in any time you see an expression like you do in these tapes of a willingness to support sex trafficking of minors.
And Planned Parenthood under the microscope.
We're sweeping the nation and scouring the globe for all the latest news.
Glad to be back here on a Monday. It was a fantastic Super Bowl weekend. Nice to see you, Lori London.
Great to see you, Chris Salcedo. Well, President Obama extending another olive branch to the business community this morning with a speech to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. The relationship between Obama and the chamber, which represents 3 million companies and is considered to be the most powerful business lobby in Washington, was somewhat chilly during his first 2 years in office. The chamber and Obama butted heads on foreign money in elections, and the organization was a vocal opponent of financial services regulations and health care reform.
Well, it seems the Muslim Brotherhood is getting a seat at the table. Egypt's courts have repeatedly rebuffed the Brotherhood's request for recognition as a party on the grounds that the Constitution bans parties based on religion. But after the last tumultuous days of popular revolt against President Mubarak in Egypt, it is now the government that is seeking out the Muslim Brotherhood to discuss Egypt's future. Mubarak's Vice President Omar Suleiman met opposition groups on Sunday in talks joined for the first time by the Brotherhood.
Well, President Mubarak's new cabinet holds its first full meeting today since the uprising started nearly 2 weeks ago with no concrete progress. In talks with Islamists and an opposition who demand his immediate exit, Mubarak has refused calls to end his presidency, saying resignation would cause chaos. Protesters have vowed to stay until Mubarak quits and hope to take their campaign to the streets with more mass demonstrations on Tuesday and Friday.
Well, in case you missed it, Bill O'Reilly of Fox News sat down for the pre-Super Bowl interview with President Barack Obama last night. One of the topics of the discussion was about Obama's economic policies and whether he is attempting to redistribute wealth and mandate health care in a socialist model.
Do you deny that you're a man who wants to redistribute wealth?
Absolutely.
You deny that?
Absolutely. Bill, I didn't raise taxes once. I lowered taxes over the last 2 years.
But the entitlement that you champion do redistribute wealth in the sense that they provide insurance coverage for 40 million people who don't have it.
What is absolutely true is I think in this country, there's no reason why, if you get sick, you should go bankrupt. Now, the notion that that's a radical principle, I don't think the majority of people would agree with you on.
Then why do the majority of people in the polls not support Obamacare?
Actually, I think it's pretty evenly...
It's close.
It's evenly divided, Bill, and here's what I think a lot of people saw. They don't like the process, and they felt that our focus wasn't on what they're focused on, which is how are we going to win the future at a time when we're losing jobs
But other people see it's a huge government intrusion, and you guys just want to take over, basically, decision-making for Americans. It's an ideological argument.
Bill, I just want to be clear about this, because if you look at what we've done, what we said was, if you've got health care that you like, you keep it.
I know Mr. President, I listen to it every day.
I know, and I listen to you.
I think a lot of folks who watch you, Bill, believe that. They think way worse than me.
I give you credit. You got a pretty big viewership, so you've been persuasive.
Well, the whole thing that the president was pointing out about this going bankrupt if you get sick, that is not at all what was addressed in the Obamacare legislation. If that was the big case, if that was his big push, then they could have done it for far less expense than over $1 trillion by just buying those that are uninsured catastrophic loss policies, which are relatively inexpensive. But that's not at all what Obamacare addressed.
Well, it is, you know, our whole healthcare system is in crisis. And I think that there's just as O'Reilly did point out, there's a difference in the ideological argument of how to go about fixing the problem and Obviously, this is something that's going to continue to be debated.
Absolutely.
Well, former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright told CNN State of the Union that the U.S. cannot micromanage the transition in Egypt.
This is an incredibly complicated and delicate situation, changing very, very rapidly. And if I may just take a minute, I think the opposition groups in Egypt are very interesting. They're not monolithic. They have some tactical differences in them. There's some personalities involved. They are also trying to figure out how to operate together. There is a desire, I believe, on behalf of some within the government to split the opposition so that you have a variety of voices coming out of Egypt. The United States, I think, cannot micromanage the process. What we have to do, however, is make clear that the process itself is important and arriving at a democratic solution is important, which is, in fact, inclusive, democratic, peaceful, and rapid. And I think that the administration has been walking a very delicate line quite well. It's difficult.
Yes, I watched that interview yesterday. She said, given the delicacy of the situation, the administration is handling it well. And really, we don't know what's been going on behind closed doors. But I think that there is a limit to what we can do as
and
well.
You got a feel for the Obama administration because we have had a relationship over the last 30 years with a dictator, even though it's been pro-American over there and they've been a good ally in the region. Hey, a dictator's a dictator, right? Well, did you guys catch this? Speaking to honor Ronald Reagan's 100th birthday, Governor Sarah Palin took some shots at President Obama and his unprecedented growth of government.
In the State of the Union address, less than 90 days after that freedom message was sent at the ballot box, and it was an historic election, yet we were just told, no, the era of big government, it's here to stay, and you're going to pay for it whether you want to or not. But they can't sell it to us with the old sales pitch anymore. So this new version isn't just the tried and tired liberal nanny state of the great society. No, now it's much worse, and it's couched in the language of national greatness, which I think to the left, that is their version of American exceptionalism. It is an exceptionally big government where bureaucrats declare bureaucrats would declare that we shall be great and innovative and competitive, but not by individual initiative anymore. No, it's by government decree.
Yeah, it was a pretty creative speech. She also took some shots at the president's initiative to get high-speed rail for the country as a mechanism to get us out of this mess that we're in economically. And she said, we're on a bullet train to ruin. That's one of her quotes from the same speech.
Well, I think she's very clearly posturing herself for something bigger.
You think, yes, I think you're right. America's Radio News rolls on. Coming up next, we're talking with Jim LaCamp. He is an economist, and he is giving his forecast for 2011. We'll share.
And a new week, and the crisis in Egypt continues.
And conservatives getting credit for the state and city revenues rebounding. We'll give you the information as America's Radio News continues.
The heartbeat of America beats first right here. Stay tuned for news when it breaks and today's top headlines when we come back to America's Radio News.
For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
This is America's Radio News Network, where the nation's news breaks first.
20 minutes past the top of the hour. You can hear it here now, or you can just read about it tomorrow. It's America's Radio News. Glad to have you on board. I'm Chris Salcedo.
And I'm Lori London. Thanks for being with us on this Monday, February 7th. Well, a lawyer for WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange says the Swedish secrecy around rape proceedings and his client's global notoriety mean there's a risk of denial of justice if he's extradited to Sweden over sex crimes allegations. The attorney said at a hearing that his client was fighting extradition because such trials are usually held in secret Rape trials are often held behind closed doors in Sweden to protect the alleged victims.
In USA Today, conservatives getting credit for state and city revenues rebounding. State and local governments are enjoying a strong rebound in revenue that will make balancing this year's budgets easier, but a nearly $40 billion fall-off in federal stimulus aid starting in July could pose some steep challenges. A new wave of conservative governors and legislators elected in November is shaping taxing and spending policies this month with more money to work with than their counterparts had in revenue a year ago. 4.3% rise in revenue, the best since before the recession began in December 2007.
Chris, get this. Some 400 fans with tickets to the big game denied seats at the Super Bowl Sunday.
Ouch.
Because certain stadium sections weren't ready. Seats were not completely installed in six sections, affecting about 1,250 fans. Roughly 850 of those people were relocated to, according to the NFL, better seats. 400 were left out. Fans denied seats are expected to get a refund of triple the cost of the face value, but whether that was enough to satisfy upset fans remains to be seen.
Let's head over to America's Radio Newsline. Standing by there is Jim LaCamp. He is a financial guru. You've seen him on Fox News, Fox Business, and CNBC. Mr. LaCamp, welcome to America's Radio News.
Chris, great to hear from you.
Nice to hear you, buddy. Nice to have you there. First off, I got to ask, I know you're out there based in Dallas. Did you actually head to the Super Bowl?
No, I had a little gathering at the house. I didn't want to be one of those fans that paid money to stand outside the stadium where you get
right.
all the traffic
yeah.
and none of the game.
There you go. And that leads me right into my first question. Tell me about the economic impact, not just there in North Texas, but also around the country. What does the Super Bowl generate every year as far as is money and revenue for businesses?
Well, this is one of the most argued about numbers that you'll ever see. Economists can't seem to even come anywhere near an agreement, but the range is everywhere from $600 million to what Forbes and Fortune say is more like $100 million. Now, I can tell you, Chris, that one of the things, and Lori, that one of the things that happens is a lot of stuff just doesn't get reported. I mean, there were stories about apartments near the stadium here rented out for the week for $40,000. Now, you can bet your bottom dollar a lot of that doesn't get reported.
Yeah.
But
for sure.
Beyond that, you've got traffic, you've got flight traffic, you've got hotels, bars, convention centers, strip joints, all these people that have tremendous increase in activity. So it certainly is a big number. It's probably somewhere in the $300 million range, but it is a big number.
Let's shift gears numbers-wise to the unemployment rate. Now, we know last week the rate dropped to 9%. We added some jobs, not nearly as much as we had hoped. Now, I'm hearing from some analysts that the numbers are skewed a bit because of construction and the weather in the Northeast. What's your take on all of this?
Well, that's correct. However, that's quite deceiving. The job market is still very, very, very sticky no matter how you paint it. It is true that the weather did disrupt many projects. But the fact of the matter is, when you look at building applications and things that are being constructed, that business is way down anyway. So it's not like if you had a good weather, we'd have all this great job formation. We've only had one good jobs month here in the last 2 years and a number of disappointments. And so until you can argue that the bad number is an aberration and the good number isn't, then you still have to assume that the jobs market remains very sticky. And until they fix health care, I don't know why an employer would take on a new employee because he doesn't know what his costs are going to be.
That's true enough. Hey, Jim, I also want you to look in the crystal ball. With all the turmoil going on, not just in Egypt, but in the Middle East at large with all these uprisings, where do you see oil going? As we're coming out of the summer months here in a couple of months, where do you see the cost of gas going?
I think it's going higher. Now remember that everything from cotton to cocoa to coffee to copper, all of these prices are going up. It's not just energy prices. Platinum, palladium, tin, nickel, all of these things are going up. You've had several corporations now say that their next two quarters are going to be tougher because of the costs that they use to build this stuff have gone up. So you can't ignore that oil and gas are priced in U.S. dollars. They are a commodity. And so while all these commodity prices go up, it means higher oil and gas prices, too. So today's inventory number was actually pretty good, meaning that we aren't drawing down inventories, meaning there is some supply out there. But when you have uncertainty in the Middle East, it's going to drive up prices. And when you have rising inflation, it's going to drive up prices. So you add it all up, it means higher prices.
Jim LaCamp, the financial guru here at America's Radio News. Thanks a lot for coming on, buddy. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Anytime, Chris and Lori. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon. Coming up here on America's Radio News, introducing solid food too soon could put babies at risk for obesity. We'll tell you about the report.
And President Obama extends an olive branch to an adversary.
And Lee Smith, the author of the book, The Strong Horse, Power, Politics, and the Clash of Arab Civilizations. We're talking to him about the continued unrest in the Middle East. Don't go anywhere. This is America's Radio News, and this is where the nation's news breaks.
All the news and hot topics when we come back to America's Radio News. Reliable and always informative. This is America's Radio News.
Get ready to get informed. It's 34 minutes past the top of the hour. This is America's Radio News. I'm glad you're there. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Great to have you with us on this Monday, February 7th. Here's what's happening.
Businesses should make their mark here in America. They should set up shop here and hire our workers and pay decent wages and invest in the future of this nation.
The president calls out big business.
It seems that that call went right to the answering machine.
Palin pounces on the White House response to the chaos in Egypt.
Well, certainly we take an interest in any time you see an expression like you do in these tapes of a willingness to support sex trafficking of minors.
And Planned Parenthood under the microscope.
We're sweeping the nation and scouring the globe for all the latest news.
It was a fantastic game for Super Bowl yesterday, just coming into a Monday here. And I tell you, Lori London, it is great when the team that you were rooting for wins.
Absolutely. And the entertainment was interesting, shall we say.
Interesting is a good way to put it.
Well, after 2 years of conflict, Chris Salcedo, over health care and financial regulations, President Obama and the nation's top business lobby, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, have entered into something of a detente. Obama delivering a speech at the chamber today, a first for him, not 4 months ago. He had attacked the huge Republican-leaning trade organization for failing to disclose donors to its $32 million congressional political campaign.
Texas congressman, an eight-term Texas congressman, has quietly declared personal bankruptcy and is blaming his family meat company for his problems. Representative Ruben Hinojosa, Democrat from Texas, has $2.9 million in liabilities, according to his filing last December 18th in federal bankruptcy court. Almost all of the owed money, $2.6 million of it, is a claim by Wells Fargo Bank, the nation's fourth largest bank. And what's ironic here is that Hinojosa serves on the House Financial Services Committee, a committee that oversees the nation's monetary policies.
Wow. Well, the financial results of a Southern Sudan referendum will be announced today, bringing the largest nation in Africa closer to breaking into two. An overwhelming majority of Southern Sudanese, nearly 99%, voted to split from the north. That, according to preliminary results, the Southern Sudan Referendum Commission, which organized the vote last month, met today with the Sudanese president to present the final results. Sudan's north and south have been at war for two decades.
All right, let's get over to America's Radio Newsline. Standing by, Lee Smith. He is the author of the book, The Strong Horse, Power, Politics, and the Clash of Arab Civilizations. Mr. Smith, welcome to America's Radio News.
Thank you very much. Hey, Thanks for having me.
Getting you on looking at this stuff that you've actually laid out in some of your books and some of your writings, this is very interesting to me about the dynamic that a lot of Westerners just really don't understand about what happens over there in the Arab world.
Right. I
mean, and all of the culture that's involved here. Can you actually lay things out for us? Maybe some of that culture background here that is responsible for the turmoil we're seeing?
Sure. I mean, one of the main subjects of my book is how power force is sort of the central aspect of Arab politics. And, of course, this is true of lots of the world, and we as Americans are extremely lucky to live our lives free of political violence, coercion, and force and repression. However, this is not true of most of the rest of the world, including the Arabic-speaking Middle East. So that's really kind of the basic the basic thesis of my book, and I think we're seeing this unfold right now in the streets of Egypt.
Now, this situation is so complicated and so delicate. Mm-hmm. Has it in some way created sort of a humility with other Arab governments?
I don't think so. I think one of the interesting things that we're seeing, I know that a lot of the Mubarak regime has been brutal in the streets of Cairo. I mean, some of the scenes I'm sure that you've seen are just horrible. I mean, trucks running over protesters, police trucks, it's nauseating. However, because the Mubarak regime is allied to the United States, it's actually much more aware of how Americans perceive the world and how Washington perceives the world as well. If you look, for instance, at Syria, which is an adversary of the United States, the Syrians are a brutally repressive regime, and one of the reasons that people will not take to the streets of Damascus is because everyone understands in Syria that if they take to the streets to protest the regime will open fire immediately, stick people in prison and torture them, and there will be no pressure coming from the United States since we're not an ally of Syria. So unfortunately, no, I think that, you know, it has an effect on regimes that are allied to the United States, but other oppressive regimes, no, unfortunately, it's had no effect.
Well, sir, is it Mubarak or disaster? That seems to be what he would like to portray. Aren't there any other scenarios besides Mubarak or
Yeah, this is a very interesting question. I mean, one of the things that we've seen is that, you know, aside from the Muslim Brotherhood, which as you know, is sort of a synonym for disaster, at least as we Americans would perceive it, certainly as Washington perceives it. Yes, he's basically eliminated all the sort of rivals for power, all the sort of centrist opposition rivals. Once we look beyond the Mubarak regime, they're really, people were talking about Mohammed al-Baradei, but Baradei has no credentials inside of Egypt. He has very little following.
He's been out of the country for the last couple of decades, right?
Exactly. So there really is no pillar of the opposition. Ahmed Mosa, who's the president of the Arab League, I mean, he's some sort of opposition, and he's well known in Egypt. But again, like how many people he can gather on the streets himself or how much support he has, it's very unclear. So, yes, I think you're exactly right. Mubarak has eliminated all potential rivals.
We're talking to Lee Smith. He's the author of the book, The Strong Horse, Power Politics and the Clash of Arab Civilizations. And, you know, you've actually lived on the ground in Egypt. Outline for us some of these myths. You actually outline some of the stuff in your book.
Mm-hmm.
Myths that Americans think of about their understanding of the Arab world.
Right.
Debunk some of these for us, will you?
Well, I think one of the things that we're seeing, again, right now in the streets of Egypt, I mean, one of the ways that people, I would say that this is a large part of our intellectual class and journalists, tend to believe that the Palestinian-Israeli crisis is the center of all the Middle East. And once this problem is solved, then it will help solve a lot of other issues in the region. Well, what we're seeing on the streets of Egypt is no one's thinking really about the Palestinian-Israeli crisis. What we're seeing here is a conflict between the regime and the people of Egypt. So, again, I think that this is a big mistake that a lot of American analysts make when they, you know, when they look at the Middle East. They think that the, you know, Israeli issue is central when it's really not.
His name is Lee Smith. He's the author of the book, The Strong Horse, Power, Politics, and the Clash of Arab Civilizations. Mr. Smith, thanks a lot for being on with us today on America's Radio News.
Thank you so much for having me on.
All right, coming up, Republicans accusing Mr. Obama, the President of the United States, of continuing a spending binge. We'll give you the story.
And hits and fumbles of the Super Bowl.
And introducing solid food too soon for your baby could put them at risk for obesity. The study comes your way right here. This is where America's news breaks. It's called America's Radio News.
We're keeping an eye on breaking news,
so you don't have to.
If it breaks today, hear it today.
When we come back to America's Radio News.
For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
If it breaks in this town,
we dig deep
till we know the truth.
This is America's Radio News.
If you want to get informed, you've come to the right place. This is America's Radio News. I'm Chris Salcedo.
And I'm Lori London. Great to have you with us on this Monday, February 7th. Well, online company AOL buying online news hub Huffington Post in a $315 million deal that represents a bold bet on the future of online news. The acquisition puts a high-profile exclamation point on a series of acquisitions and strategic moves engineered by AOL CEO Tim Armstrong in an effort to reshape the fallen internet icon.
Not a big surprise here, but Republicans are criticizing President Obama, accusing him of proposing to extend Washington's spending binge at a time of growing budget deficits. In the weekly GOP radio and internet message, Congressman Jeb Hensarling of Texas called for spending cuts and fiscal reform. Congressional budget reports recently projected that the difference between federal spending and the revenues will surge to a record $1.5 trillion for the budget year that ends September 30th. Hensarling wondered how spending us down the road to national bankruptcy helps us win the future.
Well, a day after an admired college student was shot dead in an Ohio fraternity house and 11 people were injured, the governor, college officials, and friends are all seeking explanations for the violence. Jamail Johnson, a senior at Youngstown State University, was killed Sunday as he tried to separate two groups at an Omega Psi Phi fraternity house party. Authorities say there had been a dispute. Two men had left the gathering, then returned and sprayed bullets into the crowd. Two suspects have been arrested.
Listen to this study at a children's hospital in Boston. Starting formula-fed babies on solid food too early may increase the risk of becoming obese by the time they reach the age of three. The study, which followed more than 840 young children, found that formula-fed infants introduced to solid food before 4 months of age had a 6.3-fold increased odds of obesity by the age of three. Can you believe that?
Wow. Well, New York City officials confirmed three New Yorkers have contracted cholera while they were in the Dominican Republic for a wedding. The Dominican Republic shares the island of Hispaniola with Haiti, where thousands have died from cholera. The city health officials in New York are now working with the Centers for Disease Control to determine whether the current strain is similar to the one that has been raging in Haiti since October.
Well, how's the president been handling this whole situation over there in the Middle East and with Egypt in particular? Well, does the White House truly have a grasp on this Egyptian crisis? And that was the question being posed by one Karl Rove. He says the President Obama is probably talking too much publicly.
John Bolton made this observation about talking too much a couple of days ago, and I think it's absolutely right. A lot of diplomacy needs to take place behind the scenes. For example, Hosni Mubarak, the White House, they went out and said that they told the press what he had said, which is you got to step aside and your son can't run in November, can't run in September. This probably took this very proud man and took his back and made it stand up, because the next day he said, my son was never expecting to run. The comment, you need to consider your legacy. Again, this is like provoking something. The president could have been fine if he had said everything except that, and it would have had the same positive impact and not the negative impact. Why did Robert Gibbs need to go out and talk about how there needed to be a non-secular participation in the government? Didn't need to say it. The president said he was talking about the violence against journalists and demonstrators. He could have condemned it. Instead, he said it was unacceptable. Condemning it is correct. The saying it's unacceptable makes it sound like you demand that it stops right now. And we can't ask for things we can't force.
Oh, wait a minute. You got to take Karl Rove to task on this. Maybe he's talking about just after the crisis broke. But, I mean, what he's outlining, doing things in private, is what the Obama administration has been doing for the last couple of years. It was his boss, President George W. Bush, that went public and publicly shamed Egypt for their human rights abuses. So I'm not exactly sure what Karl Rove is driving at here.
I'm confused as well. Last week, it seemed like everyone was criticized, or a lot of conservatives, I should say, were criticizing the president for saying too little.
Right.
And now he's saying too much. So it's a bit confusing. I think there's a lot of mixed messages here.
Right. And the only thing I can think of is he's drawing the distinction now that the chaos has broken out. Now you go back to behind the scenes diplomacy. That's the only distinction I can think of. But I think it bears pointing out, because it's been a criticism of President Obama, saying that, you know, George Bush was very out front. President George W. Bush was very out front in condemning the human rights abuses in public, whereas the Obama administration chose to do it behind closed doors. And that has been a criticism from the right on President Obama.
Right. I mean,
yes,
right.
Got it. Correct.
Well, on HBO's Real Time, Bill Maher asked if the fever of polarizing commentary is finally broken. He asked this to Congressman Anthony Weiner who apparently he felt was the perfect person to answer.
Maybe the anti-intellectual forces in this country, and I speak specifically about Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin, have peaked. You know, they seem to be going up for a while, and this seemed to be the week when Glenn Beck went off the rails. I mean, even Fox viewers, I think, were embarrassed at what he was saying. Sarah Palin seems to have jumped the shark. Do you think the fever has broken on crazy in this country?
Well, he has less than 300,000 viewers, so that's about 150 shoes in his audience. You know, I think that frankly what's happened is that I could have gone two ways, the number of teeth or the shoes.
I wasn't sure
what kind of audience we had.
More math education.
Yeah, we need
to do the math.
You're right.
No, but there really is. I think there's a limited universe and a limited number of people who are just into crazy right now. There are too many important problems to solve.
So according to a congressman from New York, anybody that opposes liberal doctrine that he espouses is what? How did he put it? Shoeless and toothless? I guess it's okay if you're a liberal to stereotype people, but a conservative would get in trouble for that kind of thing.
I think in general, the crazy fever has not broken.
I think so. I think so. And Wiener is an exact example of that.
Oh, boy. Did you,
now, favorite ads in the Super Bowl.
I liked Ozzy
that
and
was
Bieber.
Good. That was Ozzy and Bieber was very good. My favorite.
What's a Bieber?
What's a Bieber? I really like the Vader kid. Let's listen to the sample of this. Go ahead.
Well, when I got started on the commercial, I was just like, thrilled to have a commercial like a movie I've never even seen. So I just tried my best, and when I found the director, he said he has his own little move. So I knew I was going to make it to the top three, and so I'm in the commercial now.
So we finally discovered what viral means. I didn't have a clue what that meant before 2 days ago, and now it's just exploded. It's just been so much fun.
That is little Max Page.
Very cute.
He was the guy that was playing Darth Vader in the, it was Volkswagen, it was a Volkswagen pitch, and he was trying to make all the stuff move and use the Jedi mind trick and all that kind of stuff and move things. But I guess he has a congenital heart defect.
Right, I've heard that. And I think he is expected to be okay, but I think it makes it a little even more special that he had an opportunity to do that.
Yeah, so he's making the rounds on all the talk shows and stuff like that. And that was by far, I thought, the best Super Bowl ad when he started up the car and his dad was doing it remotely. That was very cool.
Yeah, that was cute. Well, ESPN's coverage of the Super Bowl of the Lombardi with the narrow chance for a Pittsburgh win and the return of the Lombardi Trophy to Titletown, USA.
Ben Roethlisberger throws incomplete to Wallace.
Nice.
That is it. The Green Bay Packers get the big-time defensive stop, and there will be no seventh trophy in Pittsburgh this year for number seven. There will be a return to Green Bay of the trophy named after their legendary coach, Aaron Rodgers. 3 years after taking over for Brett Favre, does what Brett Favre never did do, and that is win the Super Bowl MVP in hoisting the Lombardi Trophy for Green Bay. It is the fourth Super Bowl championship for the Green Bay Packers, the first wire-to-wire Super Bowl win since the Ravens did it 10 years ago in Super Bowl 35. Green Bay, a six-point winner in Super Bowl 45.
I was close. I called the game 28-24 in favor of the Pack.
I wonder what Brett Favre is feeling right now.
Sore? I was, you know.
Sore?
Yeah, he's probably a little achy.
Achy.
Yeah, but okay. No, it was a fantastic game all around. You know, what surprised me is that I thought the Black Eyed Peas did a fantastic halftime show, but it's getting panned by all the critics.
I didn't love it.
You didn't like it at all? I didn't love it.
All right, okay. I didn't say I didn't like it. It was okay.
All right. America's Radio News continues. Coming up here in mere moments, we're going to talk to Jason Black about the goings-on over there in Super Bowl City in Dallas with the Super Bowl. He is, of course, the sports czar for America's Radio News. We'll check in with him.
And a new week, the crisis in Egypt continues.
And WikiLeaks, it strikes again. The United States agreeing to tell Russia about Britain's nuclear secrets. You're going to want to hear this report. Stay with us. It's America's Radio News. This is where the nation's news breaks.
Breaking news and the interviews everybody else will talk about. This is America's Radio News.
¶¶
from the nation's capital. If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here, right here, now. Your anchors, Chris Salcedo and Lori London.
America's Radio News Network.
Read about it tomorrow or you can hear about it right now. This is America's Radio News. Glad to have you on board. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Great to have you with us on this Monday, February 7th. Here's what's happening.
Do you deny that you're a man who wants to redistribute wealth?
Absolutely.
President Obama responds to allegations of socialism.
I could have gone two ways, the number of teeth. I wasn't sure what kind of audience we had.
More math education.
Is stereotyping okay if you're a liberal?
What so proudly we once had the twilight luxury.
A not-so-super performance on one of the world's biggest stages.
We're combing the nation and circling the globe to find all the breaking news. Coming off Super Bowl weekend, it is a fantastic-looking Monday here in the nation's capital where we're broadcasting live to you. Welcome to America's Radio News, and hi, Lori London.
Hello, Chris Salcedo. Great to be with you, and thanks to all of you for being with us. Well, President Obama defending regulations, including new health insurance reforms, to business executives today, telling an audience at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce that the administration can work to eliminate burdensome rules, but America's businesses must recognize the good they do. He spoke on matters that concern the business community, which has failed to add large numbers of jobs, even as the economy stumbles toward recovery.
WikiLeaks strikes again. Information about every Trident missile the United States supplies to Great Britain will be given to Russia as part of the arms control deal signed by President Barack Obama. Defense analysts claim the agreement risks undermining Britain's policy of refusing to confirm the exact size of its nuclear arsenal. The fact that the Americans used British nuclear secrets as a bargaining chip also sheds new light on the so-called special relationship, which is shown often to be one-sided under the Obama administration, according to communications obtained by the WikiLeaks website.
Well, the Egyptian government pledging to investigate official corruption and election fraud, but thousands of protesters are swearing not to move from the heart of downtown Cairo until President Mubarak steps down after 2 weeks of instability that pushed the most populous Arab nation to the edge. A series of government concessions have left the protesters dissatisfied, but the scene has so far continued to remain calm.
The recovery may be underway here in the United States, but it is a jobless recovery by all estimations. Austin Goolsbee, the chief economist for President Obama's economic recovery team, weighed in on the poor jobs numbers for January over on Fox Business Network.
So, 36,000 jobs in January. You got to say that is extremely disappointing, snow, bad weather or not.
Yeah, look, if that number holds, it's obviously not near enough. It's obviously in the other survey. There are two surveys, one to get the unemployment rate and one of businesses on payroll employment. The unemployment rate fell quite sharply and showed substantial job creation. But the payroll survey, which was done in the week of the big snow, shows far less. We don't know how much the snow is. If it stays 36,000, that's not near enough.
Can I just draw your attention to one other number to you and for our viewers? In the preceding 12 months, 378,000 fewer jobs were created than originally reported. That adds to the weakness of the job situation and cannot be explained by the weather. Your comment on that, sir?
Well, no, that was the benchmark revision, and that starts back a year ago. Yep. There's no question that at the depths of this recession, it was the worst since 1929, and that was even revised downward. I don't think that was a big surprise.
Yeah, I think even the Obama administration is saying that we're not getting enough jobs fast enough. That's for sure.
Absolutely. And the economy will continue to sputter until we do get jobs going. Well, Christina Aguilera, she might not have been the best choice to sing the national anthem before the Super Bowl. Besides a lyric snafu, which we've all heard about by now, her performance has come under criticism from the toughest critics of all, the fans.
Grammy Award winner, Christina Aguilera.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed? eyes gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight. What so proudly we watched. Ouch. At the twilight's last gleaming.
You know, we were in a crowded Super Bowl party, and I noticed it right away.
I
was like, no, that's not right. That's not right right there.
Well, she says she flubbed the line because, you know, she just got caught up lost in the moment, and she lost her place. And she does have a great voice.
She can belt it out. She does.
She should have really been a little more on top of it for something like this.
I'm not saying that this is Aguilera. I'm just saying that we have seen some performers in the past that look at this opportunity to sing the national anthem, and instead of focusing on honoring America, they're focusing on highlighting themselves. I'm not saying that's what's going on with Aguilera. She wore a very modest dress. I think she was trying to honor America. Maybe she did, like she said, got caught up in the moment.
I'm sure she feels bad today.
Yep, I'm sure she does.
I'm sure she feels very bad.
Charles Krauthammer, he unloads on the climate nuts, as he called them, who want to blame every change in the weather on global warming. Listen to this.
If global warming is a problem, why are we having such a tough winter? Well, Al Gore told Gail Collins of the New York Times there's about a 4% more water vapor now in the atmosphere than there was in the 70s because of warmer oceans and warmer air, and it returns to Earth as heavy rain and heavy snow. That's
Look,
what Al Gore...
If Godzilla appeared on the mall this afternoon, Al Gore would say it's global warming because the spores in the South Atlantic Ocean, you know, everything is... It's a religion. In a religion, everything is explicable. In science, you can actually deny or falsify a proposition with evidence. You find me a single piece of evidence that Al Gore would ever admit would contradict global warming, and I'll be surprised.
And the debate continues.
It does. I mean, look, climate change means more dramatic weather all the way around. We are seeing that.
As we continue here on America's Radio News, we're going to talk to Jason Black. He's an Oklahoma-based sports writer and the sports czar here for America's Radio News. We're talking Super Bowl coming up next.
And the AOL has bought the Huffington Post.
And a member of Obama's debt commission says leaving entitlements on autopilot will crush the United States economy. Details on the way right here where America's news breaks. This is America's Radio News.
The big stories and the hot topics are all we talk about. Keep it right here, and you won't miss a thing on America's Radio News.
For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
Give you what you want. Ignore what you don't.
This is America's Radio News.
If you want to get informed, what better place to be than right here? It's America's Radio News. Glad to have you on board. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London on this Monday, February 7th. Well, two American hikers imprisoned in Iran for 18 months had their first official court hearing on Sunday. They pled not guilty to charges including espionage and trespassing. Joshua Fatal and Shane Bauer, two UC Berkeley grads, who were arrested during a hiking trip on the Iran-Iraq border in 2009, attended the hearing and, according to their attorney, appeared to be in good health. He said the judge ordered the trial continued to an unspecified date.
Former Republican Senator Alan Simpson, who was appointed by President Barack Obama, along with former Bill Clinton Chief of Staff Erskine Bowles to lead the president's panel for reducing the nation's debt, said leaving Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid on autopilot will crush the U.S. economy. On CNN's State of the Union on Sunday, Simpson went on to say, if you don't do anything with Social Security when you waddle up to get your check in the year 2037, you'll get 22% less. Simpson has been a strong voice in efforts to include entitlements and defense spending in talks on reducing the size of the annual budget and decreasing the nation's $14 trillion plus debt.
Well, a day after an admired college student was shot dead in an Ohio fraternity house and 11 people were injured, the governor, college officials, and friends are looking for answers. the Jamal Johnson, a senior at Youngstown State University, was killed Sunday as he tried to separate two groups at a fraternity house party. Authorities say there had been a dispute. Two men left the gathering, then returned and sprayed bullets into the crowd. Two suspects are under arrest.
All right, let's head over to the America's Radio Newsline. Standing by there, Mr. Jason Black. Well, we call him Mr. because he's so respected here among among us here at America's Radio News. He is the Oklahoma-based sports writer and the sports czar for America's Radio News. And who better to talk to about the goings-on over the weekend? Jason, welcome back to America's Radio News.
Wow, what an intro.
How about that? Chris. Really nice.
Yeah, I worked on that all night. You know what? I was actually thinking about you yesterday because all the times that you went on the record last week saying who was going to win the Super Bowl, I couldn't remember who you had actually said. I was under the impression you were pulling for the Steelers. Is that correct?
Well, I mean, pulling. Come on.
I thought he said this.
Don't say pulling. I had predicted that the Steelers would win. And,
yes.
And I'm glad you bring this up, Chris, because my prediction was that the Steelers would win based on their experience and the fact that they had been there before and had won two Super Bowls. I actually talked to Drew Brees on Saturday, and I said, hey, who's going to win tomorrow? And he said, you know what? If the Packers and the Steelers both play their best game, then the Packers will win. And he said, the way we felt when we played the Colts last year, the Colts had already been there, and they had won, but we were desperate, and we felt like if we don't do it now, we may never do it, and that's why I feel like the Packers are going to win. And when you watch yesterday, the two teams come out onto the field. The Steelers ran out, but Ben Roethlisberger kind of trailed out at the end, no helmet on, cap backwards, chewing gum. Aaron Rodgers and the Packers were fired up, and I watched both those teams come on the field, and I thought, what Drew Brees said is exactly right. These guys are focused, and they are ready, and the Steelers, yes, they have experience, but they've been here before. I don't think that they were as passionate or as desperate as the Packers were.
Well, Roethlisberger has two rings, and of course, Aaron Rodgers hungry, and he has that Brett Favre monkey on his back, or did have that Brett Favre monkey on his back.
Yeah, no more.
Mr. Black, I'm going to read to you a text message on my iPhone that I sent in predicting just before we sat down to the game. 28-24 Packers. I got very close.
Yeah.
He's bragging.
I'm bragging. That's the only time I'm going to brag today. But yeah, I just thought that the storyline, and I was reading for storyline because I didn't have a dog in this fight in the Super Bowl. I was going for storyline. I think the better storyline absolutely was the Green Bay Packers.
Absolutely.
Oh, I agree.
And then there's the other story, the entertainment story.
Yes.
What have you got to say about that?
You know what? This is what I've got to say about it. Leave Christina alone.
Nice.
And you know why I say this? It's like you do with your kids. People make mistakes. They don't do it on purpose. Now, sometimes people make mistakes because they're stupid or they're not thinking or they just make the wrong decision. She sang the national anthem before, and it's never been a problem. I'm sure she knows all the words. The Super Bowl is a huge stage. She made a mistake. She didn't do it on purpose. It doesn't make her un-American. It doesn't make her unpatriotic. She screwed up. Let's give her a break.
And she cruised right through it. You know, she didn't miss a beat. She just kept
Good
going.
Mess. I mean, recovering from that.
Right,
I mean,
she recovered.
I was nervous. And she recovered and continued to sing the song, and I thought actually sing it very well. So I think people need to give her a break.
So, Jason, as we transition into this, what I call the long, dark period, in every year where we have no football, what is the next thing we're focusing on? Is it spring training? Are we keeping tabs on the NBA? What are we looking at?
Well, sure. I mean, the NBA All-Star Game is coming up. You know, of course, you'd say pitchers and catchers report here pretty soon. But I'll tell you what, Chris. I mean, you talk about the long dark period, maybe a little longer and darker than we would both like to admit.
Because that's true.
There's a lockout on the horizon in the NFL, and I, as I was watching that clock tick down to zero last night, the Packer fans around me celebrating and hugging, I thought, this is the last game we're going to have for a little while, so I'm a little concerned about this offseason. I want football to come back strong.
Well, Jason, we got about 15 seconds. Give me the short version. Do you think we're going to have football in 2011-2012?
I think we'll have it. It'll be a shortened season.
All right, Jason Black, he's the Oklahoma-based writer and sports star. We'll watch, of course, that threatened lockout that's coming up here, and also other sports as we move on. It's why I call it the dark days without professional football. Jason, thanks a lot for being on America's Radio News.
Some of us are
thanks,
happy.
Guys.
Okay. Coming up, we're talking about the crush in the U.S. economy. Well, it is actually getting getting called out by one senator who was pointed to President Obama's debt commission. He says that leaving entitlements alone will crush the U.S. economy. We'll tell you about that.
And President Obama has extended an olive branch to an adversary.
And WikiLeaks strikes again, the report that you have got to hear. It involves nuclear weapons. All coming your way on America's Radio News. This is where the nation's news breaks.
The campaign for 2012 has already started, and we're right in the middle of it. Keep it set right here to America's Radio News. When we turn on the light, the insects run and hide. This is America's Radio News.
Get ready to get informed. 34 minutes past the top of the hour. This is America's Radio News. Happy to have you there. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Great to have you with us on this Monday, February 7th. Here's what's happening.
Do you deny that you're a man who wants to redistribute wealth?
Absolutely.
President Obama responds to allegations of socialism.
I was going to go, I could have gone two ways, the number of teeth, the
I
wasn't sure what kind of audience we had.
More math education.
Is stereotyping okay if you're a liberal?
What so proudly we once had the twilight luxury.
A not-so-super performance on one of the world's biggest stages.
We're combing the nation and circling the globe to find all the breaking news. We're coming to you live from the nation's capital. This is America's Radio News. Hi there, Lori London.
Hello, Chris Salcedo, and welcome to all of you. Thanks for being here. President Obama made the case today to business leaders that ramping up spending on education and infrastructure will promote economic growth and put the economy back on track. The president is speaking before about 200 members of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, a group that hasn't always been on friendly terms with the administration and remains fiercely opposed to the health care and Wall Street reform laws championed by the White House.
Republicans are criticizing President Obama, accusing him of proposing to extend Washington's, quote, spending binge at a time of growing budget deficits. In the weekly GOP radio and internet message, Congressman Jeb Hensarling of Texas called for spending cuts and fiscal reform. Congressional budget experts recently projected that the difference between federal spending and revenues will surge to a record $1.5 trillion for the budget year that ends September 30th. Hensarling wondered out loud, spending us down the road to national bankruptcy, how will that help us win the future?
Well, President Hosni Mubarak's new cabinet in Egypt holds its first full meeting today since the uprising started nearly 2 weeks ago, with no concrete progress in talks with Islamists and an opposition who demand his immediate exit. Mubarak has refused calls to end his presidency before the September polls. Protesters vowing to stay until he quits and hope to take their campaign to the streets again with more mass demonstrations this week.
All right, let's head over to America's Radio News line. Scott Atran is standing by. He is live from Paris. He's the author of Talking to the Enemy, Faith, Brotherhood, and the Unmaking of Terrorists. Mr. Atran, welcome to America's Radio News.
Well, thanks for inviting me.
First off, I got to ask you, what are you doing over in Paris?
Well, I'm here in Paris interviewing people in the Muslim community and then perhaps heading over to Cairo and Yemen.
So give us a little bit of an indication here as to that. Now, we're being told by the Secretary of State, now Hillary Clinton, that the Muslim Brotherhood is now involved in dialogue. They have a seat at the table in how this transition over there in Egypt will go. How concerned should Americans be about their presence at the table?
Well, it's very interesting that the Muslim Brotherhood has been invited to the table. I mean, the uprising had very little to do with them. They missed the boat on January 25th, and they only recuperated when Mubarak had his goons come through on last Wednesday. And because the Muslim Brotherhood is the only organization that has some history and tenacity, they were able to organize a resistance. But until then, the Muslim Brotherhood had absolutely no relationship with the uprising. Now, the fact that they're invited is the result of two things. First, I think Hosni Mubarak and the army want the Muslim Brotherhood to represent the opposition. It's a much easier sell to the European Union and America if the Muslim Brotherhood is in the opposition, that the army and Mr. Mubarak should stay in power. But again, it is mostly information-savvy young people who organized this uprising. The Muslim Brotherhood had very little to do with it. They're only trying to recuperate now. And it is the game of the administration in Egypt to play up the Muslim Brotherhood as an opposition.
Right. So it seems almost like it's a fear thing that they, you know, it's us, the Mubarak regime, or the Muslim Brotherhood. They're portraying it as if this is all you get. When, you know, it does appear to be a democratic uprising with the absence of radical Islam. Yet the fears continue. At least that's what we're hearing, you know, fears of this Muslim Brotherhood taking over. What do you actually see that happening?
No, I don't. I mean, there are only about 100,000 actual militants in the Muslim Brothers in a country of 83 million. That's about 0.1%. The often touted support of 20 to 25% is only due to the fact that there's no secular opposition. That's because if you go to a cafe and have a meeting with somebody, then the regime could arrest you and close down the cafe. But no one can close down mosques. So the Muslim Brotherhood has been allowed to survive for 83 years. But again, their influence is not as much as would appear on first sight.
So,
and the uprising, again, itself is mostly young people who have nothing to do with the Muslim Brotherhood. It's a secular, liberal, centrist-driven uprising, mostly information-savvy young people who are well-connected. And in the end, I think they will get power if they are allowed a public space.
So
people and the European Union isn't even aware of who these people are. So the only opposition out there that they're aware of is the Muslim Brothers. But the Muslim Brothers themselves aren't that formidable an opposition, nor are they Al-Qaeda in the waiting. I mean, it's true that the Muslim Brothers have an end game that is anathema or at least alien to democracy, but their means are very different from Al-Qaeda. They've been violently opposed to Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda has vilified them for the last 30 years. If you look, for example, on their website, Ikhwan Web, you'll see that the Muslim Brothers have defended Christians and Shiites against bombings in Baghdad and in Alexandria, and they're nothing like the image that's presented to them, for example, on Fox News or even by our mainstream politicians.
So do you see the possibility of an actual democracy emerging from all of this?
Yes, of course. I mean, that's what these young people want all across the Arab world. It's contagious democracy. The idea of liberty and freedom is something that these young people, especially those who are plugged into the internet world now, this massive media-driven political awakening for the first time in history, in human history, are gung-ho about democracy. And if, again, they're just given enough political space, they will attain it. They are a mature people.
We're talking with Scott Aram. He is live from us in Paris, and we're talking about the uprising here in Egypt. And Mr. Atran, I gotta challenge you a little bit on something. Now, we all know about the Muslim Brotherhood and their history. We also know that you have rightly pointed out they are a minority in these protests. A lot of the anger there on the streets seems to be coming up from the young push for democracy there on the streets. But as we have seen with the nation of Iran, a very select few can actually take the reins of power, seize the reins of power, and exploit the majority, as we have seen in the nation of Iran. How can you sit there and say with such confidence that's not going to happen in Egypt?
All right, two responses to this. Again, the Muslim Brotherhood has nothing to do with the Iranians. In fact, they detest
No. I wasn't saying they do, but we are saying that there are Al-Qaeda ties, especially since the number two, Ayman al-Zawahiri, is a former member of the Muslim Brotherhood.
He's an Egyptian. He is a disciple of Sayyid Qutb, who was a member of the Muslim Brotherhood, but he was an extremely marginal member of the Brotherhood. He had no support within the Brotherhood, and Zawahiri, his entire active political life, has vilified and condemned the Muslim Brotherhood and vice versa. But your second point, that is, a small organized group could take power in the event the other groups aren't as well organized, is well taken. I mean, that, of course, happened in the Bolshevik Revolution. It did happen in the Iranian Revolution. But remember, the Muslim Brothers have been around for 83 years. Four times they've tried to take power in one form or another. They botched it every time. And it sure doesn't look to me like they're going to be able to get away with it this time either.
All right, Scott Atran, live from Paris. He's the author of Taking It to the Enemy, Faith, Brotherhood, and the Unmaking of Terrorists. Sir, appreciate you making the time all the way over in Europe and being on America's Radio News.
Thanks again.
You betcha. Coming up, WikiLeaks, it strikes again. U.S. cable saying that they agree to tell Russia about Britain's nuclear secrets. We'll have a story coming up next.
And two American hikers in Iran enter a plea in court.
Do as I say, not as I do. A Texas congressman in charge of the nation's money files for bankruptcy. Those stories come your way and much, much more as America's Radio News continues.
Broadcasting from the nation's capital, where we catch the news before it gets away. This is America's Radio News. For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. This is America's Radio News Network, where the nation's news breaks first.
If you want to get informed, you've come to the right place. This is America's Radio News. Glad you're there. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London on this Monday, February 7th. Well, former President George W. Bush was forced to cancel a planned trip to Switzerland this week over concerns of protests linked to the Bush administration's treatment of detainees. International human rights groups had threatened large-scale demonstrations at the United Israel Appeal fundraiser, where Bush was scheduled as a guest speaker, and called for legal action against Bush for his role in the alleged torture of U.S.-held detainees. The organization called off the event on Friday.
An eight-term congressman in charge of the nation's money has quietly declared personal bankruptcy and is blaming his family meat company for his problems. Representative Ruben Hinojosa, Democrat from Texas, has $2.9 million in liabilities, according to his filing last December 18th in federal bankruptcy court. Almost all of the money owed, $2.6 million, is a claim by Wells Fargo, the nation's fourth largest bank. What's ironic about all of this is that Hinojosa serves on the House Financial Services Committee, a committee that oversees the nation's monetary policies.
Well, New York City officials confirm three New Yorkers have contracted cholera while in the Dominican Republic for a wedding. The Dominican Republic shares the island of Hispaniola with Haiti, where thousands have died from cholera. City health officials now working with the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta to determine whether the strain is similar to the one that has been raging in Haiti since October.
WikiLeaks, it strikes again. Information about every Trident missile the U.S. supplies to Great Britain will be given to Russia as part of an arms control deal signed by President Barack Obama. Defense analysts claim the agreement risks undermining Britain's policy of refusing to confirm the exact number in its nuclear arsenal. The fact that Americans used British nuclear secrets as a bargaining chip also sheds new light on the so-called special relationship, which is shown often to be one-sided under Mr. Obama, according to communications obtained by the WikiLeaks website.
Well, former Secretary of State James Baker spoke at Ronald Reagan's 100th birthday celebration this weekend at the Reagan Ranch. His message: Reagan brought out the best in all of us.
It's true, hard work never killed anybody, he once deadpanned, but I figure why take the chance? Of course, nothing was further from the truth. And that smile, that radiant, optimistic smile, it was a national treasure. He could express more with a smile than most of us can with 1,000 words. Ronald Reagan symbolized America's optimism in his very being. Absolutely nothing could keep this unsinkable man down. Not the hard times, not the criticisms, not even a would-be assassin's bullet. Of course, there were those who didn't like Ronald Reagan's politics or his policies, but they couldn't dislike the man. They simply could not, because he was very simply a beautiful human being in body and in mind and in spirit, and everyone who knew him would agree with that statement.
I saw that speech, Chris. It was very, very touching. It shows that Ronald Reagan is still relevant.
Relevant and much beloved. And all those
very
celebrations,
much.
Of course, going on, being overshadowed, I would say, somewhat by the Super Bowl this weekend, but still, nonetheless, all over the country, tributes to Ronald Reagan, one of the greatest U.S. presidents. By a lot of people's standards, were flourishing over the weekend. In the meantime, our current president, President Barack Obama, he just spoke to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and in the speech, he called for corporate profits to, quote, be shared by American workers.
If we're fighting to reform the tax code and increase exports to help you compete, the benefits can't just translate into greater profits and bonuses for those at the top. They have to be shared by American workers. We need to know that expanding trade and opening markets will lift their standards of living as well as your bottom line. We can't go back to the kind of economy and culture that we saw in the years leading up to the recession, where growth and gains in productivity just didn't translate into rising incomes and opportunity for the middle class.
This is perfectly consistent with Mr. Obama's outlook. This is when we had the auto bailout, how part of his remedy was to give ownership stake of auto companies to union members who never once had risked anything of their own financial or personal fortunes for these car companies, but they were gifted that by the administration and the restructuring. This is perfectly consistent with Obama's way of looking at economics.
Well, and of course, the bailout, the auto bailout, was only intended to be a temporary fix, and fortunately, the U.S. auto industry didn't fall off a cliff. Well, now that there's the revolution in Egypt, is Egypt's peace treaty with Israel in danger? That's always a big concern. It has been with this uprising. Challenged by Meet the Press host David Gregory, opposition figure Mohamed El-Baradei stressed that whether Egypt is a democracy or a dictatorship, everybody in the Arab world wants to see an independent Palestinian state.
Should Egypt in the future always maintain the peace treaty with Israel?
I think so, but it is not just dependent on Egypt, David. It also depends on Israel. Israel should not continue to apply a policy of force vis-a-vis the Palestinians, should agree to what everybody knows, that Palestinians have the right to establish a state.
Dr. El-Baradei, people hearing this will hear equivocation, and there'll be great fear about a potential leader of Egypt saying that the peace treaty is not rock solid with Israel.
I think everybody is saying it is rock solid, but everybody also saying that at the same breath that whether Egypt is a democracy, whether Egypt is a dictatorship, everybody in Egypt, everybody in the Arab world want to see an independent Palestinian state. David, I don't think anybody disagrees with that. That has nothing to do with the peace treaty between Egypt and Israel, which is, as you said, has been concluded, and I assume that Egypt will continue to respect it.
You know, all the guests that we've talked to here on America's Radio News and a lot of the folks out there in the blogosphere and looking on news coverage, El-Baradei, the more I'm seeing of this guy, the more irrelevant he seems to be. Is that the sense you're getting to?
Yeah, and I don't think that the people that are up, that are a part of this uprising, really even know who he is. And this whole independent Palestinian state, the U.S. is also... Yeah. Called for an independent Palestinian state.
Actually, you know, I was looking at some stories here in the wake of the Super Bowl. I didn't even catch this. A new version of Where Is the Love, featuring a message to President Obama. This was during the halftime show. The Black Eyed Peas did this. Singing against a backdrop of glow-in-the-dark words that spelled out love, Will.i.am changed the words to his hit song. And they said this: in America, we need to get things straight. Obama, let's get these kids educated. Create jobs so the country stays stimulated. This is dedicated to all the innovators, he sang. Did you catch that part yesterday?
I did not.
I missed that. So even a little politics warming their way into the halftime show at the Super Bowl.
Absolutely.
All right, coming up here in the next hour on America's Radio News, we're going to talk to Tony Blankley, the author of The American Grit, what it will take to survive and win in the 21st century.
And AOL buys the Huffington Post.
And the Muslim Brotherhood gets a seat at the table in Egypt. We'll tell you about it. That report is coming your way, along with much, much more as America's Radio News continues. This is where the nation's news breaks.
All the news and hot topics when we come back to America's Radio News. From the nation's capital, If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here, right here. Now, your anchors, Chris Salcedo and Lori London.
America's Radio News Network.
Coming to you live from the nation's capital, it's America's Radio News. This is where the nation's news breaks. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Great to have you with us. It's Monday, February 7th. Here's what's happening.
This time spent in radio, his 53 movies and many television shows helped teach him that there is an art and power in how best to communicate your ideas.
Honoring one of America's most beloved presidents.
Yeah, look, if that number holds, it's obviously not near enough.
Defending the administration's record on jobs.
Al Jazeera, I thought, performed a service in fanning the flames in Egypt. But, hey, is that so bad?
And a former American journalist still singing the praises of Al Jazeera.
We're sweeping the nation and scouring the globe for all the latest news.
Great to have you along for America's Radio News. We're keeping a pulse on what's happening here in the nation. Hello, Lori London.
Hello, Chris Salcedo. Thanks to all of you as well for being with us. President Obama made the case today to business leaders that ramping up spending on education and infrastructure will promote economic growth and put the economy back on track. He said we need to innovate, out-educate, and out-build our competitors. He spoke before 200 members of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, a group that hasn't always been on friendly terms with the administration.
Secretary of State Hillary Clinton saying the Muslim Brotherhood is now getting a seat at the table in Egypt. Egypt's highest courts have repeatedly rebuffed the Brotherhood's request for recognition as a party on the grounds that the Constitution bans parties based on religion. But after the last tumultuous days of popular revolt against President Mubarak, it's now the government that is seeking out the Muslim Brotherhood to discuss Egypt's future. Mubarak's vice president, Omar Suleiman, met opposition groups on Sunday in talks joined for the first time by the Brotherhood.
Well, the families of two UC Berkeley graduates charged with spying in Iran said today they're glad Shane Bauer and Josh Fatale were able to proclaim their innocence in a court in Tehran, and they hope the case is nearing an end. Bauer and Fatale pleading not guilty Sunday at the five-hour hearing. A third UC Berkeley graduate, Oakland resident Sarah Short, was released in September and pleaded not guilty in absentia.
Will he stay or will he go? We're talking about President Hosni Mubarak. Is he going to stay all the way till September? Will he be able to last that long? Well, former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations John Bolton says that we shouldn't expect that the Egyptian president, Mr. Mubarak, will be gone anytime earlier than September.
You know, the weight of Western media reporting is that Mubarak has to go in days or weeks at most. That immediately leads me to conclude he'll probably be there until September. The Western media are all talking to the same people, talking to themselves. I have to say, I don't agree with the reporters who have been saying that the momentum is on the side of the demonstrators. On Tuesday, they wanted a million-man march. They had 200, 250,000 people. Today was the day of the departure, and media sources report 200,000 to 250,000 people. Now, tomorrow, they've called for another million-man march. We'll see. But I think we should be at peace with the conclusion that we don't have a clue what's going on. The real negotiations are all taking place behind the scene. Everybody is negotiating with everybody. It's a 24/7 process, and the outcome remains uncertain.
What do you think about Mr. Mubarak staying as a facilitator to get this transition going? Do you think that could actually work out?
I think it may work out. I think last week most pundits didn't see how he could possibly survive, but it looks like he is surviving, at least for the time being.
Yeah, Mr. Bolton reading it right.
Well, President Mubarak doesn't have to leave Egypt, but he may want to reconsider leaving the presidency, pulling from his bank of Super Bowl metaphors on Meet the Press. Senator John Kerry said other nations in the world are flooding the zone to try and move Egypt's revolution in the right direction, in reference to Special Envoy to Egypt Frank Wisner's comments that Mubarak doesn't necessarily have to leave immediately. Kerry said the U.S. has been crystal clear Mubarak should step aside gracefully and immediately.
You know, on Super Bowl day, maybe it's not inappropriate to use the term, the flooding of the zone that's taking place with the Germans, with the French, with the British, with many other players, the Turks. There are a huge number of people trying to move this in the right direction right now. I think that Mr. Wisner's comments just don't reflect where the administration has been from day one, and that was not the message that he was asked to deliver or did deliver there. Now, that said, the president has been clear, the secretary of state have been clear, that the president wants change, he wants it immediately, he wants it to be meaningful, and he wants it to be orderly. Those are the terms that the president set out. The Secretary of State has said...
But quickly, Senator Kerry, you said Mubarak should go. Could you see him staying on for a period of time in an interim period that would actually be stabilizing? Would you support that?
David, what I said in my op-ed that I wrote last Tuesday was very clear and very carefully chosen. It said that he must step aside gracefully and begin the process of transition to a caretaker type of government.
Well, it kind of seems like that's what's happening.
It is, but I think Mr. Kerry is representing the administration's position. Mr. Obama has said that we cannot interfere in what's going on over there in Egypt. And I think that's why a lot of the folks on the right are being critical of the president, because in the same speech, in the next sentence, he said, but your new government must look like this, this, and this, and this, and he starts laying down parameters. But I think that Mr. Kerry is misrepresenting what the administration has been saying all along. In the wake of the Acorn-style video, that sting video, Virginia Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli says that his office has an interest now in investigating Planned Parenthood in light of that video last week showing the group's willingness to support the sex trafficking of minors.
Well, certainly we take an interest in any time you see an expression like you do in these tapes of a willingness to support sex trafficking of minors. You know, what you don't have is an actual case of it on film, but what you do have is clearly an open willingness on several organizations, meaning subsidiaries of Planned Parenthood nationally, in the same category, sex trafficking of minors, and an open willingness to participate in this. And this is at a time when we're dealing with human trafficking, have been for a few years, trying to figure out how to get at it. And when we see something like this, you know, you can see how it can flourish, because there are institutions already in place in Virginia and across America, Planned Parenthood in this case, who are happily willing to aid and abet that sort of effort.
Well, the group wasn't really willing to support the sex trafficking of minors. They actually fired the staffer who did that.
And two Planned Parenthood organizations right now, two satellites are being targeted because of what's been going on. And I wonder if this thing is going to catch fire the way the Acorn videos did, but we will see. America's Radio News continues. Coming up next, we have Tony Blankley. He's the author of American Grit: What It Will Take to Survive and Win in the 21st Century.
And two American hikers in Iran enter a not guilty plea in court.
And do as I say, not as I do. A Texas congressman in charge of the nation's money files for bankruptcy. It's all coming your way on America's Radio News. This is where the nation's news breaks.
We're keeping an eye on breaking news,
so you don't have to.
If it breaks today, hear it today.
When we come back to America's Radio News.
For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
If we break the story, you know you've got the details right.
America's Radio News Network.
You can read about it tomorrow, or you can hear about it right now here on America's Radio News. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London on this Monday, February 7th. Well, final results of last month's referendum show an overwhelming majority of southern Sudanese voting to split from the north, a result that will lead to the creation of the world's newest nation. That, according to the referendum commission today.
Back here at home, a member of President Obama's debt commission says leaving entitlements on autopilot will crush the U.S. economy. That's according to former Republican Senator Alan Simpson, who was appointed to President Obama's commission along with former Bill Clinton chief of staff Erskine Bowles to lead that panel and rein in Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. On CNN's State of the Union on Sunday, Mr. Simpson went on to say that if you don't do anything with Social Security, when you waddle up to get your check in the year 2037, you'll get 22% less. Simpson has been a strong voice in the efforts to include entitlements and defense spending in talks on reducing the size of the annual budget and decreasing the nation's $14 trillion plus debt.
Well, a lawyer for WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange says Swedish secrecy around rape proceedings and his client's global notoriety mean there's a risk of a denial of justice if he's extradited to Sweden over sex crimes allegations. The attorney said at a hearing that his client was fighting extradition because such trials are usually held in secret, which they are. They're often held behind closed doors in Sweden to protect the alleged victims.
I'm just very impressed that you could say Swedish secrecy so seamlessly.
My God. So.
Okay, let's go to America's Radio Newsline. Standing by, Tony Blankley, author of American Grit, What It Will Take to Survive and Win in the 21st Century. Mr. Blankley, welcome to America's Radio News.
Delighted to be here.
Hey, you wrote an article here in the Washington Times. I wanted to get you to expand on it a little bit, where you basically say, support Mubarak. Is that a call for the U.S. or is that a call for the world?
Well, that was last week, and I got another one coming out tomorrow on the same general topic.
Yeah.
I can't speak for the world. I think it's in America's interest. And what for a number of reasons, and the point I made particularly was America has allies around the world. We're going to want allies in the future, and our alliance, our word has to be worth something, because otherwise people won't decide it's worth it to work with us, whether it's Saudi Arabia and Jordan and not just undemocratic countries, but South Korea and Japan and Vietnam and other countries that want to ally with us now. So if we were to just cut the legs out from under a 30-year solid, reliable ally at the first domestic threat to him, whatever happens in Egypt, we undercut our ability to run an effective foreign policy around the world for a generation. So,
well, Mr. Blankley, you know, you say this is the first domestic threat to him, but Mr. Mubarak's been a dictator by all accounts for the last 30 years, and president after president after president has warned him, hey, you got to do something about the democratic reforms. It's not like this snuck up on the man. I mean, isn't he deserving of a little criticism, and maybe squandered his chance?
Look, I believe that we ought to execute a foreign policy that's in American interest. And yes, of course, if you know, one would prefer to only ally and work with democratic pluralists. That's not the world we live in, and it's not the world we're going to be living in. And we've criticized, although pretty mildly, I mean, Bush actually, W. Bush, was sufficiently unpleasant to Mubarak that Mubarak, for about 4 years, refused to come to America, I think, because he was so peeved at him. And then in Bush's second term, Condi Rice, when she became Secretary of State, persuaded Bush to stop bothering Mubarak. And I think Obama sort of followed on the second term Bush policy. But even then, it was not there was never any, that I'm aware of, any serious threat to withdraw our alliance from him, because it was a keystone of our interest in the Middle East and remains that. I mean, we may not be able to keep it, but we're going to pay a price, and I think the world will pay a price for what may be coming in Egypt.
Well, we've called for years for democracy in the Middle East. As the people there rise up and call for it, our fears are keeping us hoping a dictator stays. I mean, it's the devil we know, but don't we need to walk our talk on democracy, and why is he the only option?
Well, my column tomorrow deals a little bit with the nature, the chance of democracy happening, particularly in Arabic Islam. You've got a somewhat working democracy in Indonesia, which is an East Asian Muslim country. But although you've got a lot of jihadi activity going on a lot of the Indonesian islands, but the government is broadly democratic. But there's a long history of the failure of democracy to appeal, certainly to Arab Muslims. And I'm not at all convinced that even with help, that what will end up in Egypt will be democracy. I think it will be some other form of authoritarian governance. And if we could have our druthers, I'd rather see it democracy, but I don't think we're going to get our druthers, so I think we have to play the hand that we're dealt.
And Mr. Blankley, we've got about 30 seconds left here, so let me ask you this very quickly. You'll probably deal with this in your article tomorrow. What is America to do, and what are we to make of the Muslim Brotherhood?
Well, the Muslim Brotherhood, fundamentally, even if they're peaceful, and I'm not convinced they are, but even assuming they're completely peaceful now, their policy interests are contrary. They want Sharia law, and they're overtly hostile to Israel, And so their policies, if they were to be enacted in the law in Egypt, would undermine our objectives, and I believe would not yield democracy, because they don't believe in governance by the people.
The
Sharia law is governance by the teachings of God in their judgment from the Quran.
All right, Mr. Blankley, he is the Tony Blankley. He's the author of American Grit: What It Will Take to Survive and Win in the 21st Century. Mr. Blankley, thanks a lot for being on America's Radio News.
Thanks, enjoyed it.
All right, coming up here in the next segment, Republicans, they're accusing Obama of proposing a spending binge extension. We'll give you the report.
And some 400 ticket-holding fans denied seats at the Super Bowl.
And Michael J. Toten, the author of Road to Fatima Gate. We'll talk to him next, right here on America's Radio News. This is where the nation's news breaks.
Reliable and always informative. This is America's Radio News.
It's 34 minutes past the top of the hour. You're tuned into America's Radio News. This is where you need to be if you want to get informed. Hi there, I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Great to have you with us on this Monday, February 7th. Here's what's happening.
This time spent in radio, his 53 movies and many television shows, help teach him that there is an art and power and how best to communicate your ideas.
Honoring one of America's most beloved presidents.
Yeah, look, if that number holds, it's obviously not near enough.
Defending the administration's record on jobs.
Al Jazeera, I thought, performed a service in fanning the flames in Egypt, but hey, is that so bad?
And a former American journalist still singing the praises of Al Jazeera.
We're sweeping the nation and scouring the globe for all the latest news.
Coming off a very busy weekend into a very busy news day on a Monday, the Super Bowl weekend was fantastic. I hope you had a good time, and welcome to America's Radio News. Hi, Lori London.
Hello, Chris Salcedo, and thanks to all of you for being with us on this Monday, February 7th. Well, with Egypt's revolt entering a third week, many parts of Cairo appear to be actually resuming normal life today. ATMs started dispensing cash again. Shops and banks were staffed. Though some did keep the doors shut to customers, the city's drivers were snarled and traffic jams. The government also met today in its first formal meeting since President Mubarak reorganized it in the early days of this uprising, announcing a 15% salary hike for government employees. That's according to news reports.
Republicans are criticizing President Obama and accusing him of proposing to extend Washington, D.C.'s spending binge at a time of growing budget deficits. In the weekly GOP radio and internet message, Congressman Jeb Hensarling of Texas called for spending cuts and fiscal reform. Congressional budget experts recently projected the difference between federal spending and federal revenues will surge to a record $1.5 trillion for the budget year that ends September 30th. Mr. Hensarling wondered how spending us down the road to national bankruptcy helps us win the future.
While President Obama defending regulations and including new health insurance reforms to business executives today, he told the audience at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce that the administration can work to eliminate burdensome rules, but America's businesses have to recognize the good they do. Speaking on matters that concern the business community, which has failed to add large numbers of jobs, even as the economy stumbles through recovery.
Moving over to America's Radio News line, standing by there is Michael J. Totten. He's the author of Road to Fatima. Road to Fatima Gate, I should say, the Beirut Spring, the rise of Hezbollah, and the Iranian war against Israel. Mr. Totten, welcome to America's Radio News.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hey, I'm glad to have you on today because I wanted to get your perspective. Now we're learning from the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, that the Muslim Brotherhood is being allowed a seat at the table here to decide how Egypt is going to chart its way forward. As somebody that studied the Middle East extensively as you have, do you have any pause? Do you have any moments of concern over knowing that?
Well, I am concerned about the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, as anybody should be. They like to portray themselves as moderate, but I don't really buy it. Every Sunni Islamist terrorist group in the Middle East is splintered off from the Muslim Brotherhood. Now, it's true that the Muslim Brotherhood is moderate compared to, say, Al-Qaeda and most of the armed insurgencies around the Middle East, but it's also true that Hamas, which governs Gaza as a totalitarian Islamist police state, is the Palestinian branch of the Muslim Brotherhood. And they say that in their charter.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt by no means disavows Hamas or separate distances out from it.
But isn't it true that Al-Qaeda and the Muslim Brotherhood are at odds because Al-Qaeda says, you know, they are in favor of democracy and therefore, you know, they've sort of demonized them?
Yes, that's true. I mean, Al-Qaeda is the most extreme group in the world, so everybody is moderate compared to Al-Qaeda. But, I mean, the real question about the Muslim Brotherhood when they say they're moderate is, you know, compared to what?
Okay,
the democratic activists in Egypt?
So, but do you think that they really have a chance of actually gaining any sort of power?
Yeah, I think that they're going to have some. I don't think that they're by any means the majority in Egypt. They'll be a large minority party. If there's a free and fair election, they'll be a large majority party. They don't have any guns. They have no way of actually seizing control of the country like Ayatollah Khomeini did in Iran
right.
in 1979. Not if the Egyptian army continues to exist, and I don't see any reason to believe that the Egyptian army is going to come apart. And the Egyptian army is very much against turning Egypt into an Islamist state.
Yeah, Michael, you just actually led me into my next question. So I was going to ask you, as somebody that's looked at the Iranian war and the Iranian revolution when they dumped the Shah and got into this theocratic government they're in right now, I was going to ask you if you see any parallels between what's happening in Egypt and what's going on over in Iran, or what happened in Iran.
Well, there are some. The most obvious is that we've got a revolutionary situation in Egypt, and as there was one in Iran, and a pro-American, a sort of part-time pro-American dictator is being removed. And the strongest opposition to the dictatorship is Islamist. Those are all perfect parallels. The difference is, though, is that the Egyptian government is not being destroyed by the revolution. That's a huge difference.
It certainly seems like last week it looked like Mubarak was not able to even weather the week. It looked like he'd be out, and now it kind of looks like he's holding his own, at least for now.
Yeah, he is sort of holding his own. I don't honestly expect him to last really all that much longer, but I don't expect the regime to completely disintegrate.
All right, Michael Totten, the author of Road to Fatima Gate, The Beirut Spring, The Rise of Hezbollah, and the Iranian War Against Israel. Sir, thanks a lot for being on America's Radio News.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You betcha. Coming up next year, we've got a report. The latest poll is out about the repeal of Obamacare. We will share with you what it says.
And President Obama extending an olive branch to an economic adversary.
And those Super Bowl ads, we know how pricey they can be, but one automaker paid an awful lot of money, and they also received bailouts. We'll talk about that coming up next. It's America's Radio News. This is where the nation's news breaks.
The big stories and the hot topics are all we talk about. Keep it right here, and you won't miss a thing on America's Radio News.
Information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
This is the Real News Filter. We give you what you want. Ignore what you don't.
This is America's Radio News.
You can read about it tomorrow or hear about it right now. This is America's Radio News. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Great to have you along. Well, back-to-back storm systems again and widespread cold expected to bring more harsh winter weather to the eastern two-thirds of the nation this week again. One storm will spread snow and rain along a path from the Tennessee Valley to the northeast from today to Tuesday, while the next storm will bring significant snowfall to the central and southern plains from late tonight into Wednesday.
The majority of voters still support repeal of the new national health care law and remain convinced that it will drive up costs and hurt the quality of health care in the United States. A new Rasmussen Reports national telephone survey finds that 58% of likely U.S. voters favor repeal of the new health care law. 37% are opposed to repeal.
While some 400 fans with tickets to the big game denied seats at the Super Bowl Sunday because certain stadium sections were not ready. Seats weren't completely installed in six sections. affecting about 1,200 or so fans. Roughly 850 of those people were relocated to what the NFL says were similar or better seats, but 400 were left out. Fans denied seats expected to get a refund of triple the cost of the face value of those tickets, but whether that was enough to satisfy upset fans remains to be seen.
And speaking of the Super Bowl, the Washington Examiner, looking at this last night, may have noticed that Chrysler released the longest ad in Super Bowl history on Sunday night, featuring the new Chrysler 200 driven by Detroit native rap star Eminem, an ad that cost less than $9 million. And is spending millions on a Super Bowl ad, says the company. Is it appropriate for the company that received a taxpayer bailout to recovery from a bankruptcy? Maybe the ad wasn't an appeal to car buyers, but rather politicians. According to the Detroit News, Chrysler is seeking a better deal on its bailout.
Well, Kelsey Grammer and his soon-to-be ex-wife Camille have put their differences aside long enough to begin proceedings on their divorce. An L.A. judge approving the Frasier star's motion to have his divorce from Camille, his wife of 13 years, finalized. The actor, who had attempted to speed the proceedings up so he could marry his new love, 29-year-old Katie Walsh, by the end of February, has come to a deal with Camille, now allowing the judge to put the wheels in motion.
29, really?
Yes.
Okay.
29. I'm sorry. He broke up with his wife. On the phone.
Oh,
he broke up the marriage on the phone.
I heard that.
Don't like that.
That got really ugly really
That's
fast.
That's mean.
The president of the United States, he just got through speaking here about an hour ago to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. In that speech, he called for corporate profits to, quote, be shared by American workers.
If we're fighting to reform the tax code and increase exports to help you compete, the benefits can't just translate into greater profits and bonuses for those at the top. They have to be shared by American workers, who need to know that expanding trade and opening markets will lift their standards of living as well as your bottom line. We can't go back to the kind of economy and culture that we saw in the years leading up to the recession, where growth and gains in productivity just didn't translate into rising incomes and opportunity for the middle class.
And conservative critics of the president would also point out to him that it's because of the overburdensome regulations the government puts on businesses that also might help in that endeavor so they can actually pass along some of that profit to their workers.
Well, speaking of conservatives, former Vice President Dick Cheney spoke at the Reagan Ranch this weekend in honor of the occasion that would have marked Reagan's 100th birthday. He said, Reagan was here when America most needed him.
We associate idealism with youth, but the oldest man ever elected president was also the most idealistic. And he brought out that quality in the American people. He inspired the kind of affection that even great men cannot claim by right, but goes only to the truly good. Kindness, simplicity, and decency marked his entire life, long before he first journeyed here to California and long after he returned here from Washington. And remembering his final years, we might also add courage for the gallant, manful way in which he left us. There's much more that could be said. Frank Donatelli and I will turn to that in a moment. The short of it is that the great respect and admiration that your generation feels for our 40th president and that shows in the work of the Reagan Ranch Center is well placed. 100 years after his birth, history has taken the measure of President Reagan. He stands tall in memory, and let us always be grateful that such a man came along when this nation and all the world needed him most.
You know, I'm a football lover. You know, I loved watching the Super Bowl. It was a great time. But I think the only regret I have about the timing of this year's Super Bowl was that it fell on the 100th birthday celebration of Ronald Reagan, because this was one of the presidents, I think, that a lot of folks, I mean, across political spectrums, wanted to honor this man, the 40th president of the United States, for the legacy he left our
country. So you think it overshadowed? Is that what you're saying?
I think to a large degree. I mean, at least at the very least, it shared the stage. And for somebody that was a former actor, former president of the Screen Actors Guild, and ended up attaining two of the highest posts in the land, one being governor of California and then ultimately the president of the United States. I think it would have been nice to have the stage all to himself, at least for, you know, day and a half, something like that.
Okay, fair enough.
Just saying. In a speech delivered yesterday, British Prime Minister David Cameron, he suggested that to, quote, belong in Britain, individuals must sign up to core values such as freedom of speech, the rule of law, and democracy. He spoke forcefully for assimilation and took several swipes at the Liberal Party's experiment with multiculturalism.
In the UK, some young men find it hard to identify with the traditional Islam practiced at home by their parents, whose customs can seem staid when transplanted to modern Western countries. But these young men also find it hard to identify with Britain too, because we've allowed the weakening of our collective identity. Under the doctrine of state multiculturalism, we've encouraged different cultures to live separate lives apart from each other and apart from the mainstream. We fail to provide a vision of society to which they feel they want to belong. We've even tolerated these segregated communities behaving in ways that run completely counter to our values. So when a white person holds objectionable views, racist views, for instance, we rightly condemn them. But when equally unacceptable views or practices come from someone who isn't white, we've been too cautious, frankly even fearful, to stand up to them. The failure, for instance, of some to confront the horrors of forced marriage, the practice where some young girls are bullied and sometimes taken abroad to marry someone who they don't, when they don't want to, is a case in point. This hands-off tolerance has only served to reinforce the sense that not enough is shared. And this all leaves some young Muslims feeling rootless. And the search for something to belong to and something to believe in can lead them to this extremist ideology.
That is a big problem over in Europe. They're dealing with that. A lot of folks coming in from Muslim countries that are not assimilating into those nations and are actually setting up their own sections and trying. As a matter of fact, I think I've heard they have courts set up for Sharia law in some parts of Great Britain, which
really?
I think Mr. Cameron is speaking out against. I think you got to start adopting your adopted country's tradition.
Well, I think a very, very large majority of Muslims will be in Europe. It has a very large population of Muslims.
True.
It's growing.
Some areas it's 50-50 already.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Chris, lighten the mood here a little bit. Time for another wacko 911 call. Farmington, Connecticut man under arrest after he called 911 and asked the dispatcher, oh, Chris, how much trouble he would get into for growing marijuana.
911, what's the location of your emergency?
Let's not get into that yet.
It was 8 o'clock Thursday night when Farmington Police Dispatch...
I have a question.
Is this an emergency, sir?
Depends.
...received a most unusual call from 21-year-old Robert Michelson.
Is it life-threatening or an act of crime in progress?
Crime in progress, possibly.
No robberies, burglaries, or home invasion. Robert's query was about cannabis.
I was just growing some marijuana. I was just wondering what the... How much, you know, trouble you can get into for one plant.
It's a first. Yeah, I can't say I've ever had this happen before.
Depends on how big the plant is.
It's only a seedling.
No, it's possession.
Didn't take long for a call to go out to narcotics officers who arrived at Michelson's house on Waterville Road and find a small amount of marijuana and some drug paraphernalia. We made a visit as well.
I just didn't know if the family wanted to issue any comment.
No, they're really having a difficult time.
Okay.
And,
You're a friend of the family?
I am a professional.
He did tell officers that he did it because he wanted to make his mother angry.
As Mr. Michelson walked out of this door after he was processed and was heading home, he had one more message for dispatchers, but he didn't say a word.
He spun around and stuck both middle fingers up at the dispatchers.
All right. Thanks for the info.
You're welcome.
Yeah. They're just trying to weed out the info here.
Yeah, hold on a minute. Every single time we have one of these 911 calls, I make a new submission for my stupid criminals file, so that this actually is now moving up to the front. You actually call 911 to ask if you can get in trouble.
How much weed is it okay to grow?
How much weed has he been smoking already is what I want to know.
Apparently a little bit.
All right, America's Radio News done for today, but we will be back tomorrow. Let me just say this. Congratulations to the Super Bowl champion Green Bay Packers for a stunning win last night. Done in very, very, very professional fashion. Enjoy the game. It was fantastic.
Job well done. And we will, of course, continue to follow the crisis in Egypt and bring you the very latest.
For Lori London, I'm Chris Salcedo. This is where the nation's news breaks. We call it America's Radio News. We'll see you back here tomorrow.